Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. I was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
Well, you don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
Come down Swanfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
There was a very brief segment on ITV's FA Cup coverage yesterday between full-time and extra time where they went to Roy Keane for his thoughts on the Man United capitulation. One of Keane's great strengths as a broadcaster, as we have noted in the past, is his ability to become even more articulate the angrier he gets, which is the opposite to the way most of us operate. In this case, he was so pissed off with his former club that he could barely speak. He lost his ability to communicate, which is a rarity for him. You could almost see the cogs turning and him thinking to himself, jeez, I might give Mark Hanum a call. Even working for the FAI would be better than having to watch this shower try to hold on to a 3-0 lead against a championship team. Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast.
Owen, how are you doing?
Hey, old.
There'll be even more fun Manchester United content during the week because they're playing the... I just use the word content without any irony around there.
It's just natural.
You've just given in. You've given in and you've given up on.
Yeah, they're playing the Premier League's bottom club, Sheffield United, on Wednesday night. So there'll cue some hilarity around that one to hear our coverage of that. And Arsenal, Chelsea on Tuesday and the rest of the week's football. Sign up to the World Service now. Keep an eye out too for the latest episode with Richie Sadler. They drop on Wednesdays wherever you get your podcasts. Miguel Delaney is on the show today after your report on sport, please, Ken.
Yeah, Miguel isn't a fan of this Marinakis stuff. This Evangelos Marinakis, the Nottingham Forest owner.
It's a Pandora's box of social media content has been opened, Ken, and... You try and close the Pandora's box. It's not as easy as it looks.
Talking about that rusty hinge on that old box.
Yeah.
It's not as though Marinakis signed the tweet that Forrest put out, you know, but it just does feel as though he's the one setting the tone there.
Well, it's still up there, put it that way.
Yeah, of course.
If he didn't want it up there, he'd have it taken down by this point.
It's one of the most popular tweets
ever
on the internet.
Possibly. It's got to be up there.
I was just going to say, Owen, that, you know, the way that you just use content as though it's a normal word.
As Murph then did.
Yep.
I was just thinking, I now say X. I've transferred over to saying X.
Why would you do such a thing?
The name of the company.
But then I just started talking about tweets, sir. So
yeah, I don't even know what
do X call? I don't even know what the posts.
Post on X, yeah, as opposed to just tweet.
Yeah. No one's going to be saying
You'll get there eventually. You're going to stop using tweet.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You've been Elon'd, Ken.
I used it there. But anyway, they just went for it. Forrest went for it. They just said, look, the fact is this guy's a Luton fan. And you can't get, you know, it's not fair. And apparently he is a Luton fan. Stuart Atwell. The VAR, who decided that there was no point in correcting any of the obviously wrong decisions that the referee Anthony Taylor was making, he decided now. We saw Mark Clattenburg, who is the, what's he called, Owen? Oh, it's here in his Daily Mail exclusive column. he's just got a lot of fingers and a lot of pies. Klatz, the Gladiators referee.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mark Guttenberg. Referees, hat-trick of howlers to deny Nottingham Forest penalties at Everton is mind-boggling. All of this could have been avoided by refereeing chiefs. This is what he writes in the Daily Mail. Maybe he didn't write the headline. Underneath the little pointers, little bullet points say, Nottingham Forest blasted the officiating in their 2-0 defeat at Everton. Mark Clattenburg, Forest's, quote, match and performance analyst, unquote, speaks out. So he's called a match and performance analyst rather than a refereeing lobbyist.
That's just about lobbying.
One of these errors would have been bad enough. Three was a joke, and that is why Nottingham Forest were left feeling victimized after another defeat in which zero big decisions went their way, writes Mark Clattenburg in the Daily Mail. In a season where they have had to endure some egregious refereeing, this trip to Everton was as grim a game as they have encountered since returning to the Premier League, writes Clattenburg. First, Ashley Young kicked the back of the foot of Giovanni Reina. We have seen others win penalties in similar situations. Anthony Gordon for Newcastle against West Ham, for example. But not this time. No visit to the monitor. No penalty awarded. Then, Callum Hudson-Odoi's cross was stopped by the outstretched arm of Young. Handballs for making your body unnaturally bigger have routinely resulted in spot kicks. Michael Keane was penalised for Everton against Liverpool, for example. But again, not this time. No visit to the monitor. No penalty awarded. Finally, Hudson-Odoi was bursting into the box when Young... It's Ashley Young. It's 33 times. When Young challenged him from behind.
When the veteran defender.
Ashley Young, is he the oldest? I think he's the second oldest player in the Premier League behind... Who's older than? He was featuring in the FA Cup semi-final action this weekend. I'll give you one more hint. He was crying.
Oh, Thiago Silva.
He was crying. Thiago Silva was crying when behind him his teammates frolicked and gambled with Jack Grealish. That shows you the class of the man. Anyway, Ashley Young, second oldest Premier League player, challenged him from behind, completely wiping him out. Referee Anthony Taylor apparently told the players on the pitch about Young and Hudson-Odoi touched the ball. The television replays told a very different story, and VAR Stuart Atwell had to send Taylor for a second look to correct his call. He didn't. No visit to the monitor. No penalty awarded. These situations were precisely why video technology was brought into the Premier League. And yet, Atwell did not send Taylor to his monitor. It's like Mark Antony's speech. It's like, and yet, he is an honourable man. Atwell. Not once. It was a hat-trick of howlers. He remembers he's writing a column. It was a hat-trick of howlers from the refereeing team. Unfortunately for Forest, a continuation of an unjust trend that has hampered their survival fight. You will have seen the statement released by the club. How the PGMOL were contacted to warn that it was not appropriate for a Luton fan such as Atwell to play such a pivotal role in a massive match that would impact the relegation race. Certainly, I would not have risked this situation if I were the head of the referees, and all this could have been avoided had the PGMOL simply made smarter appointments. Referees do not make mistakes deliberately, but this was mind-boggling to watch. Why Atwell did not send Taylor to his screen? Only he will know.
Love to know what the other refs think of Mark Clattenburg. Just completely undermining everything that they're doing. His fame is unbelievable. Was he at Wembley? His face popped up on screen. I was watching a lot of football.
I assume he was there. I mean, he's a valued member of Nottingham Forest staff.
His face popped up.
Oh, well, hang on. Nottingham Forest went to Wembley.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So whether it's a Forest game, I was watching a lot of football. Key point is, his face flashes up briefly. And my five-year-old son goes, there's Mark Clattenburg. No, it's the Gladiators, you know? And he can name probably about five footballers, I'd say. Clattenburg is right up there.
Oh, Clattenburg would be delighted to hear
this. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, man, can you imagine?
Yeah.
That would make his year.
We haven't finished reading his column. The PGMOL can acknowledge the errors if they want. The key match incident panel can say Forrest should have been awarded three penalties if they wish. Howard Webb can offer up an explanation on his match official's mic'd up television show with Michael Owen. If he is so inclined.
Yeah, there he is.
All of that is bound to happen. But none of it will help Nottingham Forest now. So that's Mark Clattenburg with the Forest View. Mm-hmm. This has caused a big ruckus.
The key question, even before you talk about whether there should be penalties or not, is like, does an Everton win massively help Luton more than a Nottingham Forest win? I mean, can you, like, this whole thing that, oh, he's a Luton fan, they're involved in the relegation battle. Well, both the two other the two teams involved in the game are also involved in the relegation battle, and it's not entirely clear that an Everton win was 100% the result. That,
well, Everton have more points, started the game with more points than Nottingham Forest, and they have also a game in hand on Nottingham Forest. So Nottingham Forest are dead or in the water.
But a draw would have been,
I take your point, but it's not as though Forest are playing Manchester City here.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that what result is going to benefit Luton. We don't know what way the results are going to go over the rest of the season. This could backfire on Luton Town fans, Stuart Atwell. Going by the logic on display here.
I mean, the thing is that they do...
It was a brave weekend for Stuart Atwell, if Mark Lattenberg is to be believed. But it, as you say, Owen, no guarantee of success for
him. There's also still an appeal to be heard on Wednesday on the Nottingham Forest charges. So wait and see what happens with that one.
I mean, this is the thing, that it's quite rich coming from Nottingham Forest, a team that has broken the rules.
We will now consider our options, is how their tweet ended. It's like, well, one of your options is to just focus on trying to get a couple of points back off the old appeals committee now.
Yeah, well,
in a couple of days, I'm sure they've got their ducks in a row for that one.
Yeah, I mean, the Forest have broken the rules. They are rule breakers, and now they're pointing the finger at other people. You know, obviously, it's a little bit rich to do that. There are rules, though, about, you know, referees can't manage or can't officiate in certain games, obviously, where their club is involved, you know, if the referee is supposed to be. That's why you get lots of referees supposedly supporting small clubs in the Northwest rather than the clubs most people there support, you know what I mean? It frees them up a little bit in terms of the games they can take charge of.
Oh, yeah.
But like, say, Michael Oliver can't do Newcastle games or Sunderland games. So he can't do Newcastle because he supports Newcastle. But he can't do Sunderland because Sunderland hate Newcastle hate Sunderland. So that would be unfair as well.
Middlesbrough, okay?
I'm not aware of any prohibition against him doing Middlesbrough games.
It's just the same neck of the woods.
So, I mean, you know, this sort of thing does actually come into it. I mean, the Luton-Nottingham Forest-Everton triangle, I don't know if anyone's ever ventured into that territory of controversy before. I mean, it's obviously on one level sort of deranged. On the other level, what exactly was going on with those decisions? Why? Like, well, how can it be so bad?
Mm.
You know, and you get this. We've had this weekend, like this handball by Grealish in the semi-final.
That was a penalty.
It's obviously a penalty.
Oh, I agreed with you, but neither of my pundits did.
Really?
Yeah. Stephen Kelly, Kenny Gunningham both thought it wasn't a penalty.
Well, like, I mean, I don't think it's the kind of thing that a penalty would be given for sort of pre-VAR often. Sometimes it would. But in this instance, I just don't see the justification for not giving it. Grealish has...
He's in the wall. Let's just say, if people haven't seen it, he's in the wall. Free kick is taken. He has his arm, I think,
out to his left.
Yeah, a good bit away from his body. He does start pulling it back in a little bit. I think that might have been Kenny's argument, or maybe Steve. He's pulling his arm back in. But yeah, but he's got it out there. He pulls it back in to hit the ball with it, which is a handball in my book, Ken.
It's a handball. The referee obviously didn't see it. He didn't. Excuse me. He didn't even award a corner, which he would have done if he'd seen that the Man City player. So he didn't see it. This is Michael Oliver, who's. And this is the other thing about it. We've seen this series of decisions Michael Oliver has given this season favoring Manchester City. You know, I mean, it's like, wow, another decision goes wrong, but it's Man City who get the call again from a referee who was out in the United Arab Emirates officiating in a game. You know, like, I'm sorry, but I'm not sure what people are supposed to say. You know, you're just about to sit there and go...
Well, it's just another in a long series of complete coincidences, Ken.
Yeah, well, when you open yourself up, as I believe Oliver did and the referees in general did, by allowing that kind of thing to happen, then people are going to say, oh, wow, you know, once again, we have, you know, this, we can add this to the Kovacic not red card in the Arsenal-Man City game. Michael Oliver, we can add to the Rodri penalty that was awarded. Remember the Hoyland pulls back Rodri at Old Trafford. Michael Oliver was the VAR who ordered that. Then he was the referee who didn't give the Doku penalty against Liverpool at Anfield, which was another big one. And here we are not giving what seems a fairly clear penalty against Jack Grealish. In the same competition the next day, a penalty is given against Aaron Wan-Bissaka for what, in my opinion, is less of a handball than the Grealish one.
I thought that was a clear penalty as well, personally.
Their penalties based on, as is the Ashley Young one that Nottingham Forest are screaming about, their penalties in a VAR time. Now, the referee did actually give the penalty, because he gave the penalty in real time for the Wan-Bissaka one. In my book, that's less of a penalty. The guy's arm is behind him. You know what I mean? Like, it's clearly not intentional. You don't block like that when you can't even see, in a place where you can't even see the ball. You know what I mean? The ball's passing behind him and hits his sort of trailing arm. But that's a penalty. How can the Grealish one not be? I'm sorry, but like at some point you just say, well, this is a shambles, you know. And if people start making allegations of corruption, some of us have predicted this would
yeah, but you do have to be able to back it up. You can't just say, oh, he's a Luton fan, therefore, oh, we're gonna, what's it, we will now consider, NFFC will now consider its options, which everyone takes to mean, are they gonna, while they're in the middle of this appeal, they're now gonna take a legal action after results went against, now it's not the first one, obviously there was the Nunes goal against Liverpool, which they were very angry about, and they vented on that occasion as well. They certainly feel, that's part of the reason I think they got Clattenburg on board, they feel that someone's out to get them. For I don't know why there's supposed to be an anti-Nottingham Forest bias compared to any other club in the Premier League. But this thing, we warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. Apparently Daniel Taylor was, I saw him tweeting saying, obviously he's working for The Athletic on all this. He spoke to PGMOL on Friday ahead of the game to ask whether Atwell's appointment might be a problem for Forrest. The response from PGMOL was pretty emphatic. Mark Clattenburg had A, told Howard Webb he didn't have a problem with Atwell, a Luton fan, being VAR. This is in advance. And B, merely he flagged up, so this is, I presume, Clattenburg flagged up that it might be raised at Nuno's Friday press conference, and it wasn't. So going by that reading, you know, Luton are saying, Nottingham Forest saying, we told them all about this guy being a Luton fan. But according to the reporting here of Daniel Taylor, PGMOL are saying, yeah, they flagged it up in the sense that this might come up in the presser, but it didn't anyway. So
yeah. The whole thing is, obviously a lot of people are talking a lot of nonsense here. I wouldn't believe everything that comes out of Nottingham Forest's Twitter account necessarily, you know. I mean, they've got a view, you know. It's not necessarily, it doesn't always coincide very closely with reality.
You don't necessarily agree with everything Nottingham Forest have to say before.
No, but this is becoming a real problem. I mean, it's not just Nottingham Forest who are complaining about this. You know, one thing you can see, I think, is lots of people say, yeah, you know, I'm glad someone's finally saying it. This has been allowed to go on for too long. You know, it's a toxic combination of bad management of the refereeing, allowing, you know, these kinds of things to go on, referees to do earners where people can then put two and two together and say, well, hang on a second, you know, you got that. Yeah, every time Michael Oliver makes a decision, it's right there. You know, underneath all, it's like, oh, this is the UAE's Michael Oliver. You know, that's what he's allowed to happen to himself. You know, these are people who are supposed to be, you know, completely impartial figures who are above any of this type of thing, and by doing that, I think he's sacrificed that. You know, this is like a real problem, and it's a problem for the whole refereeing authority.
We are talking more about this with Miguel in some depth in a little while. So what else is happening? Quite a bit.
It's been a couple of days.
We're going back to Friday.
We are going back to Friday.
But they buried the news, Ken. Can we not just leave it buried? They put it out there on their FAI TV on a Friday, sleepy Friday afternoon.
Mark Callum's hand comes out of the soil. Comes out of the grave.
Yeah, we have to go back to Friday. So this was on Friday, the FAI put out a video of Cathal Turvin, who is one of the FAI's senior communications staff, interviewing Mark Canham, the football director, and the manager hunter, the manager whisperer. And
he's whispering extremely quietly, but it says things.
Just a man sitting on a park bench whispering.
Actually,
into his
I'm
own
just
hand.
Gonna leave it. I don't know what you're offering me, but I can't hear you, and that's it, I'm away.
So look, let's just play a little bit of the clips. I mean, the first question is obviously, yeah, you know, we're obviously in, what was it, mid to late April now. Why haven't we got a manager yet, Mark? Why has the process, as he refers to it, why has the process been delayed, Mark?
A number of reasons in terms of why that is the case. One is around the criteria that we're looking for in terms of the type of coach. Head coach, clearly we want someone who's going to come in and improve the team and make us competitive. We want a coach who's got a good mixture of club and international experience. And we're very clear on the vision that we want to achieve. The second point is around the conditions. We've spoken to a number of coaches who are available at the moment, but also those with contractual arrangements. that are already existing. And the third point is around the competitiveness of the market. So we're looking for the right coach with the right fit and the right timing for that person and for us. And for all those reasons, it just meant that we've not been able to conclude the process at this point. And we will continue the search to try and find the best person for the job.
For all those reasons. What reasons?
Yeah.
They're not reasons.
Well, you know, he named three of them right there.
No.
What more do you want?
He said
first, second and third, just to ensure that we could understand him very clearly.
He said the first reason is that we're looking for a coach with a good blend of club and international experience. That's just a description of a type of coach.
Okay, and there aren't any of those in the world at the moment.
Well, he didn't say that. I mean, if he said, we're looking for someone and there isn't actually anybody out there, then that might have been a reason. It would have been questionable, but like it would have been a reason. But instead, what he's just done, he's just stated a kind of a job spec.
Yeah.
Right? That's not a reason. The second one was, what was the second
existing
one?
Existing contractual obligations.
We've spoken to some coaches who currently have contractual obligations and some who don't. Again, that's not a reason. That's just a descriptive... Not very descriptive, but a descriptive statement about reality. Some coaches have jobs, others do not.
None of them have been hired by us.
That's not a reason why we don't have a coach. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then the third one, what was the third one again?
The third point, he said, is around the competitiveness of the market. So we're looking for the right coach, the right fit, and the right timing for that person and for us.
Yeah, I mean...
you read it out in your own voice, it seems even more.
We can disregard the last bit, which is just a sort of a remix of the previous two points mashed together, you know... We're looking for the right person who can take the job at the right time, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, but the competitiveness of the market. How would you translate that from Mark Canham speak?
The marketplace for managers is not cheap. The FEI does not have the sufficient respects. Yeah. To get the respect.
The second point being around the conditions, I also felt is a hint along those lines. Like we haven't got mega books here.
Okay, well
I'm trying to decode.
Only got two reasons. Yeah, well, look, I mean...
Can I just say as well, by the way, I don't know why a part of the job spec has to be a good mixture of club and international experience. So if Jurgen Klopp finishes up and says at Liverpool this summer and says, you know what, I would like a change of pace. I don't need to retire at all. No. My wife's going to be sick of me, let's be honest. You know, all this stuff. Yeah. So you know, Ferguson told Cathy told him to go back to the. So he's like, what I'll do is effectively a part time job. I'll do some international football with the Republic of Ireland. And they say, sorry, mate.
Yeah, go.
You haven't got any international experience.
Go serve your apprenticeship somewhere else. And in a couple of years, let's talk.
Do you know what I mean? This idea just the idea that we can't hire anyone and yet we're throwing these random, what I would think are totally unnecessary stipulations into the job spec, such as needing international experience. Anyway, sorry, Ken, you were...
Well, maybe we should talk to Klopp. You know, you saw Nagelsmann signed a new contract.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the whole Klopp-Germany thing sounds a bit, well, that's not going to happen. He's going to have the... Maybe Canham should, you know, just go over and wait outside the training ground.
Maybe he does. Maybe Klopp
change
does have international... Maybe
not whisper.
International experience could be, in his case, working in... couple of different countries, for example.
Poses as an autograph hunter. Klopp is driving out. Jurgen like throws himself in front of the car. Klopp has to stop, winds down the window to shout at him, passes through the window
a copy. Contract, but like get him to sign an autograph.
Klopp is not going to sign something that some madman stuffs at him through a window, but maybe Klopp would accept the slim volume of Heinrich Böll's Irish and Tagebuch. Canham say, listen, have a read of that. Have a read of this.
We'll move you out to Achill Island. Is that the land on Achill Island, is it?
German literary Nobel laureate.
Yeah.
Writing about his time in Ireland and how just wonderful it was.
Yeah.
Wunderbar. The people.
Fantastic.
The Irish people. You know, you arrive there. 5 minutes later, they've invited you to a wedding. You know, great. Yeah. And maybe Jurgen, you know, and maybe we've actually booked you a weekend, Bear Peninsula. You know, you can have a read of that, have a think about it. And I won't text you because there's no phone signal. Where, you know, and maybe he will be into that.
Yeah.
I mean, is it worth a try at this point? I don't see what else.
We've got plenty of time. We've got until September. We've got enough time to try out these things. So, what about that idea that maybe the conditions aren't quite what?
Well, if
leading managers,
if you're searching, this is the thing that annoys me so much. Increasingly annoys me about this. If you're saying these are our parameters for our search, and your search has returned zero results, what do you have to do? What do you do?
Change the search.
You have to change the search parameters. Okay? You have to say, okay, well, look, maybe, you know, if our ideal candidate has returned zero, let's fiddle around with some of these settings and see what else the system can come up with. You know, because otherwise you just don't get anybody.
Yeah.
You have to, like, this is what I don't, oh my God. How can they not realize that at some point you just have to act? You just have to do something. You know, have we got any more of these clips of this thing? Okay, what's the next clip? Deadlines. This is brilliant. So, you know, when Cannon looks back at this process, which has taken up a huge chunk of his life, it is his life's work, in a sense, this managerial hunt. You know, what does he...
You can imagine at the press conference, he'll just collapse exhausted. Yeah. Like, you know, the first marathon runner. It's just like, and the new Ireland manager is...
How long did Michelangelo...
Jean-Louis walks from behind a curtain while we just, like, mark him off. Just drag him off the stage exhausted. He's collapsed unconscious.
How long did Michelangelo take to do the Sistine Chapel?
4 years.
Oh, okay, right. Well, we've still got a bit of time to go. Although it is a very nice...
It's a hell of a roof.
Look, when he looks back at this process, it's not finished yet. Maybe it will end up taking 4 years, but are there any sort of things that he looks back and wishes maybe we could have done differently?
We recognise that the timelines and deadlines that we've previously set have created a sense of expectation and potentially confusion for everyone. In hindsight, that we would maybe not set those deadlines if we were to do this again and absolutely just commit to trying to find the best person and take as long as that should take.
Mate,
that's our aim.
This
so
is the regret.
We recognise and apologise for that.
We apologise.
We're confident that ultimately we believe.
We apologise for having said that we would have appointed a manager. We apologise for that bit that we said we had someone. Mm. Well, to be fair, he didn't say he had someone, but he very strongly led people to believe that that was the situation.
Yeah, there's no mention of that in the interview. The person who may or may not have had the existing contractual obligations that was preventing them being named.
There's not because if that was a thing, man, he goes on to talk about we respect and confidentiality this and confidentiality that. I'm sorry, but like this just makes him look really bad. You know what I mean? It does. Having been in that situation where in early March we listened to him. And he said, look, you know, we're not in a position to announce, but by early April, we should be able to announce just existing contractual obligations. You know, it seemed to be just some formalities need to be concluded. And his whole attitude was, don't worry about it. We've got this. Turns out that was just nonsense. Right. And if there was if there was someone who pulled out at the last minute, you know, when he kind of did a bit of a double cross or whatever, you know, had
or qualified for the Euros or something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, qualifying for the Euros is always something that could have happened. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a... If this person doesn't qualify for the Euros, then we might be able to hire them.
Lads.
Then you don't sit there saying we can announce someone in early April because you don't know that.
Well, listen, to be fair, it's literally never happened in football before where a manager suggests that he has interest from other clubs or international federations to ensure that he gets a new contract with the country or club that he's employed by. That's literally never happened before, so we can't expect the FAI to have seen that particular piece of really rather rudimentary deception going
on. Let's just make sure that they don't get any further, even faint praise for keeping the process confidential, as they were getting for a number of months. It was like, well, at least there's no leaks coming out. Yeah, because there's nothing to leak.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That is unfortunately the conclusion that you're now led to, having sort of fallen once for the thing of, oh, well, it looks like they've got something in the bag here. You know, it's just they're just waiting to unveil what's in that bag. Now, I'm afraid we don't believe you.
By the way,
in that bag.
If you think about that, he's apologising. He's literally apologising for setting deadlines while setting a new deadline of September.
September, yeah. No, we expect September, although it's a bit of a soft deadline. It's the expectation. Yeah. It's what we're working towards.
Well, but Ken, like, quite apart from everything that was said, everything that was said in this interview was annoying, but basically what you'd expect an FAI-produced interview with Mark Hannum to contain, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, they have no comeback. They have nothing to say about this process. It's been a complete disaster. They have no idea what to do. They have no idea what they're doing. I mean, the real question is, why the hell did they release this video? Like what possible good could have come from this complete shambles?
Well, obviously the chief executive left during the week. Or he's on the way out. That was, you know, people want to know what's going on. I suppose we'll tell them something.
Yeah,
but like the way to do it in this way is just going to annoy people because the people who you're usually dealing with when you're relating this news is the journalists, right? The journalists are obviously all pissed off because, oh, you did this instead of doing a proper press conference. You go, you take a bunch of softball questions from an in-house interviewer rather than like have to actually sit there and answer questions which people will come up with. I mean, it can be quite effective sometimes. You know what I mean? That sort of, you have a bunch of people who are all sort of asking different questions around the same thing. It can be quite good at ferreting information out, but they didn't want to do that. So obviously those people are all annoyed. I suppose they're thinking, well, who cares about that really? You know, we can live with that. But then when you see the responses to them on the actual social media post, Jesus, like the stuff people were writing under there, you know, let's just say it didn't go down too well.
A lot of it unbroadcastable.
Yeah, I was thinking, can I quote that? Can't really quote that. Look, it's all there. You know, it's a free speech zone out there in X. You know, people are saying all kinds of stuff. And it just seemed like, well, this isn't great either. You know what I mean? I think it would have been ultimately better for him to, you know, do the front up thing. You know what I mean? Rather than like this kind of, here, there's a bit more of it here. There's a bit more. Cause there were some, even though it was only 4 minutes or so, there's some jaw dropping moments, of which this I thought was one.
Yeah. In the two June friendlies, the expectation now is that we have an interim head coach. But whilst we continue the search for a permanent head coach for September, we would like that to be John O'Shea. We're very, very pleased with what he did in the March friendlies, and we're talking to him at the moment. We hope to be able to confirm that as soon as possible.
How can you not have confirmed that before doing this video?
This is what the video needed to be. As you're saying, why are they putting it out? I would have thought they're putting it out. And you don't just leave John O'Shea as an afterthought. You start with, John O'Shea has agreed to be the interim manager for the next two games. We've been blown away by his professionalism. Say some lovely things about him. He's great, legend of Irish football, all that kind of stuff. We are working towards getting a new thing, and then go through the rest of your bullshit reasons for not having a new manager.
100%.
I don't understand why they don't. He was literally in town. He was in Dublin a couple of days earlier doing a gig, a UEFA gig.
100%.
Get him locked down at that stage and then announce. And then you can frame it as good news in the short term.
See, that just seems so sloppy. Like, how can you say that and not realize that it's embarrassing to say this? How can the words come out of your mouth and not say, you know what, actually, now that I've just said that, it gives me an idea. We could actually call him and confirm that.
Carl, could we just hold this just for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Just for 10 minutes. I'm just going to give John O'Shea a call and just try and finish that. Don't you think maybe that would be a good idea?
That might,
Carl,
be good.
To actually have that squared off. Wouldn't the video actually be even
better?
I mean, I know the first 10 takes have been really good. They've been really, really excellent. But I think this John O'Shea confirmation of the interim managership,
it could be a real line. You know, it's a strong line to have in this video piece. Look, I mean, that's amazing. And so that, to me, I worry about someone when a basic thing like that can't even be got right in a kind of a pre-cooked communique. You know, and you're thinking, well, it doesn't inspire confidence. Mm. You know, it really doesn't inspire confidence about generally how things are going to be gone. Yeah, I know you, Kieran, were like, if John O'Shea should tell him where to go with this job offer.
A few people have said that, yeah.
But I mean,
I disagree, actually. I mean, I think O'Shea just...
Like, John O'Shea really wants to do the job, and it's to his credit that he still has an enthusiasm to do the job. Mm. But to be asked to be the interim manager so that these
Or
guys,
not asked. It's told in a video. Well, we're hoping it'll be him. You know.
Well, I mean, I think, to be fair, listening to that, I was like, well, John O'Shea has said, I'm going to have to think about this for a couple of days, guys.
Yeah, well, then don't put out the thing.
Nobody was screaming for this video to come out last night.
None of it makes any sense, but I would say that they've at least asked John O'Shea, surely.
You would hope.
I mean, is that any stupider than releasing the video?
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, John O'Shea is a better Irishman than me if he takes this job. Honestly, like, the level of disrespect being shown to John O'Shea is incredible. incredible.
Well, look,
genuinely incredible. And I know it doesn't matter that he's played 100 times for Ireland. It doesn't matter from the point of view of how good or otherwise he will be. We have been down the road before with Steve Staunton. He played 100 times for his country. But my God, the disrespect.
Yeah.
I mean, who are you going to... You've had 10 months to think of this.
It's not 10 months yet, to be fair.
No,
they have, to be fair.
It's 10 months since June. Yeah. They've had 10 months to draw up a list of names, talk to those people, hire a person. They have not been able to do that. No, nothing in anything they've done in that time leads you to think that more time will give them... more time will help them to come up with a name. Because they can't. They haven't come up with any names. Like, the whole thing is just... It has honestly been shocking to me
I also think that this whole thing of like fixating on, you know, because obviously O'Shea is just going to be the interim manager again. Now, I was listening back to the Canham O'Shea press conference, you know, when he announced him, this was the day that Canham was saying the existing contractual arrangements. And Canham introduces O'Shea by saying he's got a brilliant mix of experience at international level and at club level, both as a player and a coach. And you're like, well, that's literally what you're looking for.
If Mark Canham listens to the words that comes out of his own mouth, then maybe we'd hire John O'Shea.
Well,
like, he just keeps saying these things. It's like, oh, well.
You've just got to accept at some point, okay, it's ridiculous not to have a manager. We need to act. We need to make a decision, right? This guy is not our ideal guy. Maybe we look foolish because we, you know, appointed him interim and we said he wasn't going to be the full-time manager. But given that we don't have anyone better and time is running out, we're pissing away games now.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
We're pissing away time.
We're literally starting with the Nations League now. This person is going to have no squads before that, no meetups, nothing like that.
As opposed to O'Shea, who could at least, if you say, O'Shea, we're going to give it to John O'Shea and like let's put our trust in him and hope that it works out. He's a good guy. You know, is he a thief? No. Is he a madman? No. He'll do for us, right? You know, that's like
nothing beats coming home to Waterford.
Look, let him get on with it, and maybe we'll work on it. And if it doesn't, then we'll be getting a new manager again in a couple of years, because that's what happens in international football anyway.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the coaches in the Euros, like very few of them are in the job for very long. More than half, less than half of them in the job as long as 4 years. Right, a quarter of them are in the job less than 2 years. Right, we're talking about a job which is increasingly a 2 year cycle, maybe a 4 year cycle.
Yeah.
Right. So, and you're talking about wasting nearly a year without a manager. It just makes no sense. Like it's just a paralysis. Mm. You know, at some point it just becomes a paralysis of like, I'm scared to take a decision and stand over it.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately what you diagnose.
But like, where is the anger from?
Oh, there is. There's plenty of anger.
But no, it's like anger from people on Twitter. Like, I mean, the entire FAI, the idea of like being involved in a club in Ireland and having to put up with this. Like, that's what I'm looking at this going, okay, grand. Like, you hire Jonathan Hill and Mark Canham after the Delaney shambles and five interim CEOs. Fine. But like, at what stage does someone someone who's like been at the coalface of Irish football actually say, I'm going to be the CEO, give me the job, and I will actually try and not be historically awful at this job.
I don't think the Irish men senior manager position is the kind of thing those people would concern themselves with anyway.
No.
I mean, that's not what they are going to care about.
Is any other leg, you know, any other tentacle of the FAI octopus really, you know,
it's the,
like, smashing
it's the regime,
it at the moment?
It's the Abbottstown regime.
Yeah, at some stage, like, I'm going to feel responsible for this. Because I've actually just sat here and looked at the FAI be this terrible for its entire lifespan, and I've done nothing. I've done absolutely nothing to make the FAI better. And it's actually, really, it's our fault. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Like, we've put up with mediocrity for so long that it's actually our fault. The nation should have watched that on Friday and said, this is a terrible, terrible mess, and it's all my fault.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You want to talk about a playmaker?
Owen McDevitt.
Owen McDevitt from Ireland's Second Captain Show.
That's a playmaker. Playmaker.
The Second Captain's Podcast.
All five is to be coming rushing.
The Second Captain's Podcast.
It's finger licking good. Special, special. Now, I'm going to tell you this, too. I have been hurting. Because I have been having to tell the truth about
Second Captain's show in Ireland.
It's something finger licking good special. That's what I'm talking about. And they do look great because we got that finger licking ass right.
Miguel, your unstoppable ascent in England's high society continues to captivate and inspire us back home in Ireland. Where were you watching the Cup semi-final yesterday? Do tell.
I was in the Royal Box.
Oh, yeah, why not?
not that decision was given. I was beside my good friends in sports media. There's a few of us. Yeah, it was quite interesting, especially as... it was interesting in perspective, I suppose. I was walking in at one point and our table was in the corner, of course.
Oh, yeah, you only get a corner table in the Royal Box.
But I was walking by, both of the Glazer brothers just literally walked right in front of me, through, like it was their kind of entrance in. And then, of course, from the same vantage point, I saw Jim Ratcliffe arriving after his marathon.
Yeah, was he in good, was he in good nick? Was he looking fresh?
He was extremely fresh. 4 hours 30.
Not bad for a 71-year-old.
71, yeah. Wow. Now, somebody he has access to advice.
Marginal gains.
Yeah, of course, and this was all the more interesting as not just the football proceeded, but a lot of the day's controversies.
Yeah, Howard Webb, refereeing royalty, he was there.
yeah, and was videoed. I think everyone's seen the footage on social media now, and being asked about the whether he spoke in the Forest. Not yet, I can say, because I've written it this morning. Someone directly put it to him when it happened, given there was a few of us there. Some March break, or basically went straight looking for him when the Forest statement dropped, and he did not offer a comment at that time either. He did not look pleased.
No, well, we will get to this because this is sort of looming over the whole day. But the match itself was absolutely incredible. I mean, it didn't. It looked like it was going to be pretty boring. I'm not going to lie. I did turn the match off. I said, well, yeah. I know which way this match is going to go. Manchester United winning 2-0 at halftime. There was the Liverpool-Fulham game on. I threw that on. I ended up going back to the Manchester United match. What happened out there?
Basically, United's system, such as it was, collapsed. And like my abiding memory of the game is essentially for about half an hour, towards the end of the 90, whatever extra time, the kind of most repeated pattern was basically just Coventry scorching down the wings. Really kind of seeing... I mean, United obviously have injury issues and absences, but that shouldn't explain giving up three goals, or even whatever, but three goals, giving up so many attacks to a team that's eight in the championship where the entire squad costs less than Anthony. Coventry... essentially figured out where those gaps were, repeatedly went for them, and okay, even if there was a bit of fortune about both of the first two goals, well, this was the situation that Manchester United caused themselves. And again, this is of a theme, because if you're in a situation where you're conceding over 20 games a match. I think yesterday just about got to 20, although that was when I checked. I think it was an extra time. You've got to lead yourself open to this, or deflections, or the bounce of the ball going against you. And like, I was just thinking after the game, especially the first thing I noticed when the game ended and United won on penalties was Anthony turning around and cupping his ears towards Coventry. Beyond that, though, has there ever been a way to win a game that's been less worthy of celebration?
Yeah, and the rest of the Man United players, there was no rush to Rasmus Højlund to celebrate the winning penalty. There were a lot of handshakes and commiserations, other than from Anthony.
He thought he was playing for Argentina against Holland.
But while it was still in the melting pot, you had Andre Onana shithousing their captain who missed the penalty. You had Bruno Fernandes giving it loads to the Coventry goalkeeper, trying to get in his head. So they weren't above that kind of thing. They were pulling out all the stops to try to scrape past Coventry in the semi-final of an FA Cup. Unbelievable stuff.
I mean, I was thinking about it, actually, just when it went to 3-3, and even before the kind of the last-minute winner that was ruled out. You know, this kind of big online phrase used to be used with Arsenal was their banter era. Is United now worse than that? Like, just the sheer sequence of not just bad results they get, but like farcical, chaotic results. I mean, even when we were talking about it yesterday, I'd forgotten that Bournemouth went to Old Trafford this season and won 3-0 and like played them off the bar. And even this, I mean, it sums it up, where even this, a victory, is just of the same theme. And you wonder at this point whether, I mean, I think for all that everyone was wrapped up in the Coventry story, I suppose the other side of that was everyone was thinking about the cup final and how, well, I mean, that's going to be the biggest mismatch of all time and City will just destroy them. But is it going to be much more of a mismatch than United against City? It probably might be less of an occasion in that sense, because A, we had it last year, despite the fact it's a Manchester derby. I mean, like, if Coventry qualified, it would have been all this. I mean, given the way the game is going, it would have been another, actually, of this season's better stories and something to get behind and have a kind of just a different element about a game like that. But instead, what it's probably going to be, I mean, it's not certain, but it'll probably end up, an easy 2-0 win for City?
Hey, you never know, Miguel. Manchester United. And it raises the question, Erik ten Hag, I think, would push back against your characterization of yesterday's game as farcical and worse than Arsenal's banter era. He would, I feel, if he were here, point out that it's Manchester United and not Coventry who are in that FA Cup final. And he pointed out, I think, after the game, that actually Manchester United's record of getting to these cup finals under Erik ten Hag is exceptional. This is the second time he's done it in two attempts. He referred, I believe, to the decade of the 2000s when a big Manchester United team only got there three times in the decade, and he's done it twice in 2 years. You know, which sounds like a man stating his own case. If they were to go and win this game against Manchester City, you know, notwithstanding everything that you've mentioned about the chaos and Bournemouth 3-0 and the fact they nearly lost 4-3 yesterday, spiritually lost 4-3 after being 3-0 up, let's face it. They spiritually lost that game.
We're counting the offside goal.
In the 121st minute. And given the fact that they've conceded 20-plus shots in nearly every match this season or whatever the exact statistic is, it's total nonsense. If they beat Manchester City, the great Manchester City, deliver a second trophy in two seasons for Erik ten Hag, finish off the season on a high note, will he still be the manager next season?
I would say that would be relevant to decision. I think the only thing that could save him is potentially the market itself and the fact there. We're kind of going into a weird transition stage with managers and the kind of whole generation, because after years where Yellow was like five or six who were this definite elite, that isn't quite true anymore. We're kind of moving into a next generation, and because big clubs are so specific about who they hire that way, anyone that comes in is going to be a punt. So that is the one thing I think that could save ten Hag. But I mean, like, it's an open secret United are actively considering what next. As regards to kind of point about the three cup finals in two seasons, well, I suppose the obvious response to that is look at the league table. And that is consistent with the kind of wider discussion about United and why they're in those finals. Because, to be fair to ten Hag, two of those runs came in what I would say is the one spell of his two seasons of VAR where I think it was very reasonable to think, right, something's happening here, this is good. And it was basically from what was around after the World Cup last season to, I suppose, really actually when after Martinez got injured. But even maybe a little before that, given the 7-0 against Liverpool. I mean, just another element of the banter here, a 7-0 against Liverpool, and it's almost like a little kind of punctuation point in history. But that it was in that kind of 3-4 month window where they looked like something was coming together, where there was an idea where, I mean, because Ten Hag's big thing is a system where, and it's ironic given how Coventry went at them yesterday, they kind of stretch opposition sides with speed on the wings. And I remember, like, when they beat Barcelona in the Europa League last season, that was, I think, maybe the ideal of what Ten Hag wants in that sense. And it did. It did result in one League Cup win and an FA Cup run. But even by the FA Cup, it had petered out. I think they were seen as fortunate even to get to that cup final in the end. And those same issues that even manifested towards the end of last season have continued throughout this season where, you know, this is what I find the most baffling thing about Ten Hag, and essentially why it's hard to disagree with any decision that would move him on. He's essentially been appointed on the premise of primarily what he did at Ajax and getting them to the semi-final in the Champions League in 2019, but also because after a decade where United made kind of almost these reactive appointment decisions, like, you know, bringing in Solskjaer or Mourinho as a response to Ten Hag, or big names, and essentially
Van Gaal.
Two managers that never had it in Moyes and Solskjaer, and two managers that will pass it in Van Gaal and Mourinho. And so they went for, I suppose, what would be seen as a very modern profile, an up-and-coming manager with a distinctive ideology who had done well at a club on the way up in that way. And of course, the ideology element being key, because that's what every elite club does now. And primarily because Ten Hag is Dutch, he would seem to be, you know, a perfect fit for that. He would be assumed to be an ideology manager. And yet, what's been so confusing about his time at United is we haven't really seen any evidence of that ideology at all, unless on the rare occasions where he has all of his best players. And, I mean, you know, a constant argument through this that you see online with United fans is, oh, he's had too many injuries, he can't be expected to play that way when he's lacking players that are central to it, like Martinez. But, I mean, the whole point of the ideology is that you play through that because
it's not just about the special individual players. You've actually got a system.
Exactly, yeah, and even speaking to, like, coaches in the Premier League who are also baffled about, like, what United look like. Developer, you know, a system isn't something you can turn on or off. It would be dependent on who's there. The whole point of development and getting players ingrained is going through all this. Yet, Ten Hag seems to, I'm not sure, I mean, at this point it's hard to say whether it's a failure of the players to apply it or him abandoning it in so many other games. Either way, it just adds up to this series of chaotic matches where United are one of the easiest teams to play against in the league. Certainly the easiest relative to the you know, immensely expensive squad they've got.
And yet, they're in the FA Cup final. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. But we mentioned Howard Webb was there. People were chasing after Howard Webb, seeing what he had to say about the statement that was issued by Nottingham Forest. And I'm going to read out this statement. This has 40 million views now on X in less than 24 hours. Three extremely poor decisions, say the Nottingham Forest account says. Three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options. That was the Forest statement. I don't think you're a big fan of this, Miguel. Can you tell us why?
It's the most inflammatory statement, I think, I've ever seen in English football. I'd be particularly concerned about a few elements. One, actually being the last. I mean, the FA are obviously investigating Forest for questioning the integrity of the game, which is right. But the last few words where there's almost this, well, I suppose you'd call it an implied threat of legal action. I mean, if that starts to happen, whatever about all these wider issues in the game, if that starts to happen, the entire premise of football and sport breaks down. Because you need to be able to trust in the rules of the title. That has to stand or else sport can't function because rules can be changed afterwards. And also, it seems, I mean, first of all, even on its own terms, the statement is a disgrace. It's an embarrassment. But it's all the worse given Okay, I think most people would say Forrest should have had at least one penalty from those three decisions. But even still,
I'd say at least two penalties.
But even still, they all are, they fall within the realms of subjectivity. That is, again, essential to how games are refereed. And I don't warrant a statement like that. I mean, nothing really does. But what's, I think, most concerning of all is actually the amount of support that this statement has gone on. You know, as you look at the quote tweets and the responses, and I think one of the most common responses you see is actually, oh, thanks to a club for finally speaking up about authorities. And like, the mood has always been as if, oh yeah, it's finally, it's, you know, fans feel this disconnect from the way the game's going. And even I had a put to me last night about complaints of, you know, financial disparity, PSR, ticket prices, and finally the club is speaking out. But I mean, you couldn't have, oh, it's like basically Donald Trump presenting himself as not one of the elite. You couldn't have a worse indication of the game, many modern problems, and this highly controversial media mogul who has a history of complaining against referees in Greece, where he owns Olympiacos, owning multiple clubs, and then spending so much money on wages and transfer fees. I think at one point, there's some amazing stats about the money Forrest spent in comparison to kind of the three big Spanish clubs or entire leagues. Mm. But to the point they get breached, or sorry, to the point they've been charged with, or actually had points deducted for breaches of financial.
That appeal is going to be heard this week, and it's going to be on Wednesday.
Yeah, but you remind me of one of those Everton defenders here, Mikael, playing the man and not the ball. You know, I mean, this is... why shouldn't he complain if he's repeatedly getting done dirty by these referees? You know what I mean? Well, you know, why shouldn't he points out that the massive mistakes that are being made, which are going to cost his club potentially their Premier League status?
But the difference between the criticism of a perceived incompetency and questioning integrity, there's a world between those. And the latter was one of many reasons I think why this is an embarrassment. And it feeds into this kind of evolution, the way, I suppose, in the discussion around football as well. I mean, it reminds me of going to Spain in the 90s and you pick up Marca or Mundo Deportivo. And like, even though this is a league with Rivaldo, Romario, and they were talking about bloody refs every single week, or having offside lines drawn on the page. But there is actually something more serious here, because I've written about this, it's more for the Independent. What I do think Forrest's statement was an embarrassment. What happened there, and I think why the response is so interesting in some ways, is because it's tapping into this disconnect where essentially the Premier League has a legitimacy crisis now. And I mentioned Spain there because, I mean, something that someone said to me yesterday at Wembley was basically, it's getting all of this Serie A, and you know, you have a club publicly criticising referees like this, but also the fact they've got a situation of points deductions. And it's sort of amazing, given the kind of wider themes here, given that we're having this discussion about the Premier League, as it goes into its fourth decade in this position of essentially unassailable superiority, where it pays $2 billion more in wages than any other league on the planet. And yet at the same time, it has this great product that it's trying to, it's trying to sustain. It's got so many questions coming from all angles. And that's why I think the Serie A point is all the more interesting, because, well, what happened to Serie A in the 90s and 2000s when it had what seemed a similar position of unassailability? Well, it was brought down by a legitimacy crisis, right? Calciopoli was of a whole different scale. Not on a whole different scale, but it was different because it was about influence peddling. But suddenly, it comes really from the Premier League's laissez-faire attitude about regulation. We're essentially three decades where the thinking, and multiple people from within the competition say this, where the thinking was almost, they didn't want to go too far in anything because it would harm the product and harm the TV rights, because nothing harms, you know, a football or a sporting product more, I suppose, and I hate using the word product repeatedly, but that's what it's become, than, you know, asterisks or point at a table, because it erodes trust in sporting competition. But that's what's gradually happening now from these PSR cases, and of course, you know, the investigation into Chelsea, and the big existential event that's hanging over the entire league and is comparable to Calciopoli in its scale, which is the Manchester City cases. And I think this kind of, you know, debate about refereeing, even though I would consider it separate to all this, feeds into it.
But the problem with virus, okay, maybe you do get, you know, a slightly higher percentage of decisions correct, but the ones that you get wrong are a million times harder to accept. And this is really where this type of thing flows from. Like, if you've got this system, if you've got a system which drags referees into the center and which means that their decisions are going to be judged by a much higher standard, then this is the inevitable consequence that's going to flow from it. People are going to go, this isn't just the ref making a mistake. These guys are crooked.
People are going to say that, right? Fans are going to say that.
Yeah.
The people watching in the pub.
But why should they be any different?
Should the clubs be any different? Clubs should have the same principles as somebody talking shite down the pub.
Yeah, so we should pretend we don't see what's happening here. I mean, Carragher made this point, right? Carragher.
But what's happening here is not corruption. What's happening here is a few 50-50 decisions going against you. But Forest feel, and they're not the only club, that this happens to us. It only ever happens to us. I'd love to see Forest do this crusade if after a decision goes for them and say, look, this is a wrong decision and we're going to step up here. We're going to sort this out. We're going to say, we've got to get this right, and we're going to say we don't deserve these 3 points.
Well, people made the point that Forest themselves got promoted after some kind of VAR disaster.
So let's hear them talk about that.
Which they were having a laugh about. But like you say, Carragher used that phrase that you used. This is like a fan in a pub about the Forest statement. But like, you know, I don't really... Like, Carragher himself is kind of at the forefront of like a change in all of the like previously accepted norms and culture of like broadcasting. You know, the previous standards of propriety and decorum have completely gone out the window. You know, he's just there sort of, you know, openly cheering on Liverpool, more or less. And, you know, that's the kind of the sort of culture of broadcasting now is increasingly partisan, and like the pretense of objectivity has gone out the window. But for some reason, we expect the clubs themselves are going to be the only ones who retain this like old sort of Victorian attitude of, oh, well, you know, we mustn't say anything about the integrity, when, you know, maybe they've got more reason to suspect the integrity than anyone else.
Miguel?
But the one thing I would say on that, I suppose, is, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. The noise was bad. I mean, even the fact that I made reference to Spain in the 90s, the noise was bad in the old days, and with constant accusations of corruption. Okay, now, one change in that is, of course, that social media amplifies all this.
And you can watch the clips over and over again.
I would accept that VAR changes the dynamic. There is actually something interesting there, because a lot of executives in the Premier League have trying to lobby so that VAR becomes some kind of VAR light, where exactly as you say, it doesn't fixate on marginal decisions or marginal offsides, and it is only for genuinely clear and obvious errors, as put to me, hideous errors. Now, the problem there is IFAB have no interest in that. They don't want to walk it back in any way. And if you sign up to VAR, you have to sign up to that version. And there's probably a few different reasons for this as well. I mean, one, I suppose, is a classic in football where there's often a reluctance for anyone to say they got something wrong. And that applies to referees as well. It does feed into this debate, to be fair. Also, I suppose that linked to that, so much has been invested in this VAR system where it has shaped the game now for half a decade. And then, to a certain degree, changed how it's played. So to suddenly kind of abandon that principle, it's not likely, or it doesn't feel very likely.
What about Ken's point that the fans speak a certain way about the game, pundits increasingly speak in a similar way about the game, so why can't clubs have carte blanche to do the same thing, to act the same way?
Well, some fans speak in that way, and they just happen to be the noisiest fans. But even then, like, there's a complete, like, what do people want here? They basically want multiple contradictory things all at once, which is accuracy, speed, common sense, consistency, but they can't happen all at the same time, and because of that, there is going to be a space where there are decisions. It's inevitable, and it's inevitable to be a few of them that are going to be complete howlers. I mean, the lesson is really for everyone to just grow a bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I don't see that the sort of defense of the status quo was particularly persuasive. I mean, we're talking about Neville and Carragher. Like, Neville say, his thing was, you know, the way this used to be done, and basically outlined the traditional scenario where Alex Ferguson would just come out and personally intimidate the referees. I was like, how is that better? You just had one really powerful tyrant who the referees were all scared of, and his club had an unfair advantage from that. You know, I mean, that's how was that better? I mean, that's just kind of like he was the only one now doing what Mara, you know. Did he ever say that referee is biased because he's a Luton fan? I don't remember an incident like that. He did say a referee wasn't fit enough. You see referees in other countries who are fit as butcher's dogs. This guy's a disgrace. You know what I mean? Which is pretty personally abusive. Like, I just didn't really get the distinction between what Neville was talking about and sort of what Forrest are doing now.
Well, actually, on that, so it's been put out since, and I've had it said to me, that in the discussions before the game that the PGMOL were involved in and Forrest were involved in, there was no request to change the refereeing team, which kind of just speaks to how absurd this whole statement is. But like, in terms of the status quo as well, if we're talking about kind of protecting the status quo, like, I'd see referees as the least of the many, many issues that football has in the assess. So the one thing I would say in that, I mean, and because this is something else that's come up, again, referees probably don't help themselves.
Going to the United Arab Emirates and doing Garners. I mean, that's like an incredibly toxic thing for their credibility. Howard Webb just waved that through.
Yeah, and again, look, there are simple steps that could be taken to improve that. But we are, I think, like when it boils right down, because if you get down to kind of first principles on this, it is still attempting to officiate a very fluid game. That's never going to be perfect. I think it's the wrong thing for a lot of people to fixate on. It is literally part of the game.
Yeah, although it could be. I mean, it could definitely be. I mean, could it be improved? This is the other question: is it just something like the misery of the world that you have to accept? You're just going to have to put up with, or is it something that could actually practically be improved by practical steps? I mean, for example, do you agree with Richard Keys? Who has a theory which he repeatedly sets out, that certain alpha dog referees refuse to be told what to do by their inferiors in the VAR booth, and he refers specifically to Michael Oliver, who is hailed as the best referee. He gave another bizarre decision in favor of Manchester City on Saturday. When he decided he didn't see Grealish handling the ball. I mean, there was, you know, it was a handball against Wan-Bissaka. It wasn't a handball against Ashley Young. It wasn't a handball against Grealish. What's the difference between these things? Just, you know, just randomness. But Michael, the key theory on Michael Oliver, and I see no reason why it would only apply to him, is that he kind of sees being sent to the to have a look at a decision as like some kind of a humiliation. That, you know, that this should never happen to him. He's too good for that. Is that, do you think this is realistic? And if so, what can be done? I mean, can we send guys like this to therapy? You know, it's about working as a team. It's not, you know, you don't have to sort of cry and feel like your masculinity has been taken away because someone has suggested maybe you could make an even better decision than the one you just made.
I mean, I can't speak to Oliver's personality. I think it is known that, and I suppose it's the nature of the job as well, certain refs do have strident personalities. That's going back years. And of course, this is something that Mike Dean articulated in that interview, where he basically just revealed that he didn't really have an understanding of the system he was supposed to be responsible for, which exactly spoke to that point you made, I suppose. You felt it was almost kind of undermining someone by helping them, by pointing them to a decision. I suppose in terms of improving, and while on one side I would say people have to grow up about it, also on the other side there could be a more mature attitude in the game. And this is a problem with so many things within football authorities, where there can be an arrogance in that sense as well. And it does feel some of the VAR problem comes from almost this build up of multiple issues and a commitment to a system that kind of makes this kind of creates this top heavy problem where, like, there's almost this idea we have to persist with everything or else it comes to accepting the whole thing is wrong, rather than where they could easily make fairly incremental and easy steps to improve it. And one of them might be the communication with referees and how it's framed with referees.
What do you mean by that, the communication with referees? You mean them coming out and doing interviews and all that kind of stuff?
Even the way kind of, I don't know, I suppose we had an example of this with the Liverpool Tottenham game earlier. This comes to, I suppose, the idea of just how much authority a referee has in the dish. Because that's the fundamental of this debate as well. You know, do we want the kind of decision to be with the referee, or do we want the referee's aided by?
Well, the decision obviously can't only be with the referee if you've got a video review referee as well. It's shared. It's the authority is now diffused. If you're going to have VAR, you have to accept that. Like, otherwise, there's no point in having VAR. It just exists to infuriate people as the referee ignores the VAR and does his own thing. I mean, it's just so stupid to have the worst of both worlds. If you're going to have VAR, you need to have referees who are accepting, okay, we're working as a team. Sometimes that means me, for, you know, say I'm Michael Oliver. You know, Michael, I think you missed that one. And me simply going, oh, really? Well, thanks so much for telling me. You know, let me go over and have a look at that. But I'm really glad that you pointed that out to me, because the important thing here is to get the decisions right. I mean, that's how the attitude should be, but it's clearly not the attitude that it is. What about the last thing that occurs to me, Miguel, is maybe you know, some accountability. What if we gave some accountability? What if we threw some meat to the mob in the form of a couple of referees who got sacked every year and replaced by new ones? I mean, would that slake the rage of the crowd just to see that people are paying for their mistakes?
Well, they're struggling to get referees as it is, which is another kind of contributing factor to this debate, to this whole discussion. That, you know, abuse is off the scale. But you just, I suppose, bringing it back to that point you made about VAR, it does feed into this. One of the contradictions of this whole system is that it's essential. It does want it both ways, in that football wants the old world of all everything going up to the ref and him being the ultimate authority, but yet, and it's tried to fit this system inside this technological system that actually, by definition, changes the kind of the way we perceive the game, because the rules as we have them and the application of the rules weren't designed to be able to kind of break everything down to kind of, you know, individual scenes and look at everything into this forensic detail. So that is, I think, that's a contradiction that is adding to the many problems. I'm not necessarily sure a kind of an early ruthless approach.
Vote the public vote. Vote them out like a reality show.
League table?
Just vote out the most unpopular refs.
League table referees?
You see, you can't do a league table, because the problem is, how are they going to score the points? You know, whatever way it is to score the points, they'll just start sort of juking the stats.
That's a fan vote.
No, a fan vote is just make the thing based on like mob emotion and you know.
Sounds like this is the way you want it to go.
Well, look, because I just don't think a kind of a numbered system, a system of numbers would work. It'd be like, you know, when you put in those league tables in schools or whatever, they start sort of behaving in weird ways to try and climb up the table, right? As opposed to doing what the thing is they're supposed to be doing. So I just say, put it to a vote. Just get rid of the two most hated refs every year. You know, well, look, it would help if it helps to release the valve on some of this stuff. Oh, and you know,
on that point, actually, this is done the rounds a bit this morning, that previously Clattenburg, who actually was also someone that Marinakis complained about in Greece, saying he withdrew confidence in. Yeah. Well, Clattenburg has previously written a column for the Daily Mail where he praises one Stuart Atwell. One of the best.
Can't believe that he would say one thing one week and then another thing another week.
Yeah. Miguel, thanks so much.
Cheers, lads.
What does it look like? A turtle, is it?
Yobs.
There's an incredible podcast on at the moment, produced by the Second Captains.
Biggest load of bollocks. The Second Captains show in Ireland.
We're now getting to that point now where we are inspiring.
The Second Captains podcast. Pretty much we're done for the last 20 years. Be role models to kids.
Welcome to it. Hey, Pat, do you want to split?
You mentioned the German Nobel laureate earlier on, Ken.
Yes.
Which reminded me of this email from Sive Dolan. Hi, lads. My sister has had a baby and was messaging me that her baby wouldn't stop crying unless she was sitting in an office chair going back and forth. I finally had the moment to ask her, were her landscape of affordances truncated? She asked, what Werner Herzog thing was I watching? Is Ken finally on Werner's level as a modern philosopher? Also, thanks for the 1 minute of vegetables from a fan of Leinster hurling. That's in relation to the Jamie's comment that we put the vegetables before the meat when talking about Leinster ahead of Munster.
Yeah.
In the championship preview the other day. We'll be talking hurling tomorrow, Ken, but yeah.
Mm.
You, Werner Herzog.
Werner. Have you read Every Man for Himself and God Against All, Ken?
No, this is his memoir, is it?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be good.
Ah.
That's a good review. I like
Jenna.
That.
Ah.
You thought
it's
it was
not as
two,
good.
2-star review from Murphy.
Did you think do you think it's the kind of thing that works better in screen grab form?
Yeah, it might be. When he was talking about Thomas Muller in that.
There's a bit Thomas Muller.
Yeah. Thomas Muller is his favorite
football player.
Yeah, his favorite football player. Oh, I've forgotten the rationale, to be honest.
He's the soul of Bavaria.
Yeah. If you're going to read Werner Herzog, Conquest of the Useless. Now, there's a book. Unbelievable. The making of Fitzcarraldo. Total and utter insanity. Pure and utter insanity.
Did he write the book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Werner wrote this one as well, I can tell you. It's extremely Wernerish.
Wernery.
It's extremely Wernery. Including, the book finishing halfway through a sentence, because so you read the introduction and the introduction is, I wrote this book as a stream of conscience thing, and then one day I decided that the book was over, so I stopped writing. And then you get to the end of the book and it literally just stops in the middle of a sentence. It's like, okay, Werner,
fair enough.
Is this all enough an excuse to play it with the Timo Werner tune? He's not scored enough goals to justify.
Oh, I would say if you're waiting on Timo Werner to do something on a football field, just go with
Thanks,
Werner.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, thanks, Owen, and thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Owen, and thank you, Kieran.
Thanks a million. Lots of Premier League football coming up during the week. Sign up now for €5 a month plus VAT to hear those podcasts and to hear every episode with no ads. The Second Captain's Podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Einen Bruder, wird Timo genannt. Ich bin stolz, ist überall bekannt. Timo kommt aus Leipzig, ist ein Torgarant. Timo Erner spielt für unser Land. Timo Erner ist kein Uhrensohn. 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 Icke Hüftgold ist ein Uhrensohn. Icke Hüftgold ist ein Uhrensohn.
Never go home,
those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.